Welcome back. This is episode number 262. Today, I am being interviewed by David Ralph, the host of the Join Up Dots podcast. I had a really good conversation with David about all things podcasting. And of course, as I tend to do, I get a little bit excited about the whole outsourcing podcast. So, you know, I share a few stories there, and he's a little bit into inspiration. So I try and get on the inspiration bandwagon as well. I hope you enjoy this. I certainly enjoyed my conversation with him. If you want any of the show notes, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/262. This podcast is brought to you by Payoneer, the leading global B2B payment solution for the outsourcing industry. If you're a BPO or freelancer or have outsourced staffing, then Payoneer makes sending and receiving international payments super simple, quick, secure, and of course, low cost. They have some fantastic features which have been designed specifically for the needs of this industry. You can easily manage payments between your clients, staff, and suppliers across multiple currencies and international bank accounts. Payoneer help make outsourcing easy, so consider them now. And if your BPO, clients or suppliers aren't already using Payoneer, then ask them why not. For a limited time, Payoneer is offering a $50 bonus if you sign up now. So go to register.payoneer.com/OA or go to our website and we will have links there.
When we're young, we have an amazing, positive outlook about how great life is going to be. But somewhere along the line, we forget to dream and end up settling. Join Up Dots features amazing people who refuse to give up and chose to go after their dreams. This is your blueprint for greatness. So here's your host, live from the back of his garden in the UK, David Ralph.
Yes, hello there. Good morning, world. Good morning and welcome to another episode of Join Up Dots. We're somewhere in the, I don't know where we are now, probably 1600s, maybe a billion episodes we've delivered to you. But certainly we're getting more and more feedback on every single episode, which is the desire for the show right at the very beginning to inspire you guys to go out and do something different and don't just sit there taking crap from that boss you don't like. Don't sit in that box just doing the things that bore you stupid. Take chances, take risks, but do it in a structured way. Now, today's guest who's joining us on the show is a man with knowledge to burn. He can talk passionately about how he created huge success in the entrepreneurial world, actually bootstrapping a business to the tune of 20 million, as well as building a multi-million dollar property portfolio business. But he's also seen it all come crumbling down around him too. Now, starting his first venture at age 17, he has travelled extensively and lived in more than five countries as a young man. Now, this blend of travel and business means that he's very familiar with a wide variety of business models, work cultures and methodologies. Heard the phrases digital nomad, online traveller? Well, he was all of these before anyone knew actually what to call them. Now, due in no short measures to his travels, he's been firmly obsessed by the world of outsourcing and virtual teams. He was introduced to outsourcing in 2011 when he needed a solution to a 24/7 staffing requirement and simply could not afford the high labour costs of the West. He is now one of the industry's biggest advocates and so founded Outsource Accelerator in response to the growing need for an independent source of outsourcing information and education. Now, outsourcing, otherwise known as offshoring or BPO, is a booming industry. The West is outsourcing many of its roles to the developing countries of the world, and this is happening at an increasing rate as technology facilitates faster transfer with better interface across a broad range of applications. As he says, there is an unstoppable trend of this, as naturally high cost functions will seek out lower cost alternatives, and outsourcing is the way to go. It greatly benefits the developing countries that it utilizes, and it is a huge economic boon for the developed countries that seek cheaper resource. So how do you make this work for your business without having to micromanage the work you needed done in the first place? And I guess most importantly, how do you find good workers when you're so detached from ever personally meeting? Well, let's find out as we bring onto the show to start Joining Up Dots with the one and only Mr. Derek Gallimore. Good morning, Derek. How are you, sir?
Hi, David. How are you? Thank you so much. And what an incredible introduction. That was just amazing.
It's nice to get the stuff out of the way, isn't it? And then we can go in any direction at all. Now, I was just saying to you beforehand, I was watching YouTube last night and you popped up and I saw a walk around your office. And very impressive it sounds too. Now, the question that came to me last night, if you're outsourcing, do you actually have to pay for office space or do you rent that office space off of somebody else? Does the outsourcing kind of continue down the line somewhat?
Yeah, I mean, look, to broadly introduce outsourcing, it's easiest if you really just think about it as employment. It's really no different to employment. And as you get in general employment, there's every sort of option, every way of kind of skinning the cat. And look, generally, I suggest that it's better to get facilities. It's better to have your people in a warm, comfortable, functional office environment. But you don't have to. There's also a lot of home-based options out there as well.
Now, you obviously have got an English accent, but where are we talking to you today, sir?
Yeah, so I'm sitting in Manila in the Philippines, which is really the mecca of globalized outsourcing. The Philippines and India have been, you know, the world leaders at it. But really, you know, my heart is in Manila in the Philippines.
And where were you originally? Why did you leave our country? Were we not good enough for you, Derek?
Well, you know, my parents took me away. I was born in Coventry, for better or worse. And then
I can understand why you left, Derek. I can understand why you left.
Yeah. I know, right? I know. But no, I'm actually very fond of Coventry. I left when I was about 3 years old, so I don't have a lot of original memories. I was raised then in New Zealand. But then, as a lot of Kiwis and Australians do, they go back to London. So I spent about 8 years in London between about 20 and 28 years of age, sort of thing. And then I had one of my bigger businesses still based in London, so I was commuting back there for about the next 10 years as well, every quarter. So I'm very, very fond of Old Blighty and London, and of course Coventry, where a lot of my family still are.
And now, with your business being a global entity, do you look at it and think to yourself, really, there is no restrictions to anything now? With the way the technology is changing literally on a daily basis, the sort of old business models, are they dead or are they still thriving but just in a different way?
That's a big question, David. Well, look, globalization, I think, is absolutely mind-blowing. You know, it was over just about 100 years ago when Greenwich Mean Time was invented, and England had different time zones because no one bothered to make all the clocks the same because people were so infrequently traveling between towns in England. And then the steam train came along and enabled people to travel very quickly between towns, and they realized, hey, we actually need to standardize the times within the stations here. And you know, that is not that long ago. That's about sort of two or three generations ago only. And you know, now we're seeing, you know, you and I are having a discussion spanning the globe. We very regularly jet set across the globe. It's incredible how small this world is becoming. And you know, one of my main motivators for this is I really believe in about the next sort of 15 to 20 years that we're really going to have one globalized economy, and very specifically one globalized labor force or labor pool. You know, everything is heading towards sort of one market. And I believe that's a fantastic thing. It's not something that people should necessarily be worried about, but there's definitely a convergence into one market.
Now, sort of moving into your realm of expertise, I know that so many people, they talk to me about how to get a business started. And one of the things I say to them is, you know, outsource what you can't do as quickly as possible, because then you see exponential growth if you do it right. But there's always a reluctance to go with, as they say, sort of the non-West countries. Now, I have outsourced and I have found the Philippines to be amazing, and I found the Indians to be good. good once I kind of get past. There's certainly a language barrier there, even though they speak English, that I didn't have at all with the Philippines. The Philippines, it was just like, throw it at them, bang, it was done, and it was amazing. How do people overcome that mindset that they are going to be struggling to actually get the right work done, Derek?
Yeah, look, it is. There's a nuance to it, and there's a skill to it. But as with general employment, you know, there are thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of books out there for management, how to manage teams, how to motivate people, how to build culture, you know, how to get people on board with your mission. And to be honest, it's no different when you outsource to the Philippines or India. But when you outsource or offshore, you just have to consider that there is increased friction. And that friction might come from language barriers, it might come from cultural differences, and it might also come from the fact that you're communicating through a computer or apps instead of actually being there shoulder to shoulder. Now, you need to watch that these friction points don't get too big, that it makes the endeavor of the project or the employment unviable, you know, because you as a boss or a, you know, you don't want to go to work kind of shaking your head every day saying, oh my God, I've got to tackle this again. So outsourcing is the balance of removing as much friction and having, you know, an easy go of this as possible. And now with improving technology, and I believe the Philippines, you know, it's very culturally aligned and it's really easy to build teams and, you know, staffing overseas. And this is only improving with time. Just notably on the Philippines, you know, the Philippines was conquered, for better or worse, about 500 years ago by the Spanish. They became Catholics about 500 years ago. So there's incredible sort of alignment in terms with Western values and sort of general kind of being Western. They were then conquered by the US about 75 years ago, which is where they adopted not only first tongue English, but also pizzas, NBA basketball, Netflix, Spotify, you know. So this is a super homogenized country. It is the third largest English-speaking country in the world. And all the kids, all the millennials, all the people in the 20s, they're growing up on a diet of, you know, NBA and basketball, YouTube, and this, again, is one world. So there's very little friction, really, in terms of doing business with Filipinos.
Now, I found them brilliant, as I say, and I had a PA for a while. I don't now because I've got a lot of the systems really structured, but I kind of just do it myself. But this lady was brilliant, but I knew at the beginning there was going to be some training involved. So what I did, I recorded videos in bite-sized chunks, put them onto OneDrive. I allowed her to watch them, and then we did a test over a couple of weeks that she got up to speed, and then she was up and running. But I've heard nightmare stories where people kind of expect the staff to just understand by a few emails back and forth. Have you got any advice for somebody sitting here thinking, actually, I've never thought about this, how they can get their chosen staff member up to speed as quickly as possible?
Yeah, absolutely. And you really, there is no getting away with the need to invest time. And again, like normal employment, that is exactly the same with anyone if they're sitting in your office in the UK. You have to spend a lot of time upfront, and this is increased when you're not sharing the same office and you're not in the same space. You have to really get them on board with your business, your mission, and then show them the technical aspects of what is required. And you know, the industry generally is very process oriented. So it's all about mapping the processes, identifying the processes, identifying the key outputs of those processes and how the metrics so that this can all be tracked. Now, that might sound a little bit advanced. You don't need to do all of that before you outsource. What I suggest is just outsource and then sort of treat them as you would a new person in your office. Just spend time with them over Skype. Show them things shoulder to shoulder. You can share Google Docs. And then as you progress, you can gradually build out systems if you don't already have systems in your business. But again, the Philippines is, you know, it's been doing it 25 years and there's incredible executive talent here in terms of building out systems, building processes, having KPIs and metrics in place so that everyone knows where they are on the same sheet. And you know, the people that you bring on to help you can actually help you build out these processes as well. But there's unfortunately no escaping the requirement for spending quality time with people up front, bringing them on board and training them and showing them the processes. And you know, ultimately it takes time. And you know, in the first day, you're not going to know each other's communication patterns and processes. But after a couple of months, 2-3 months, then you'll be working together. You'll be in step, and it will be a little bit like a dance. You'll be working well together. So it's, you know, it is a little bit of time investment, and as you say, investment into the processes and making sure it's all clearly laid out.
So basically, for at least the first couple of weeks, you should create dummy work that somebody can do that doesn't affect your overall business, but then you can see that they're getting up to speed, and then you can give them feedback before you actually make them go live, exactly like you would do in a normal office environment.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. You know, if you've never outsourced before, it depends on the client, on the requirement, on your business. You know, if you've got 500 staff and you have a lot of processes in place and this is just really augmenting another role, then it would just follow your natural processes. Whereas if you're a, you know, sort of SME or a solopreneur and you're bringing on your first staff member, then there's a lot of things to tackle there. You know, you're learning how to delegate, you're learning how to create processes yourself. And so just take those things easy. It depends if they're a generalist that you're hiring. You know, if they're doing general administrative tasks, then yeah, of course you need to onboard them with those things. But if you are hiring an expert accountant, or you're hiring an architect, or you're hiring you know, a marketing executive or a digital marketer, then of course they should be more obviously aware of their profession, their vertical, and be able to sort of help and assist you far quicker. So it kind of depends on the roles that you're hiring for and the processes that you're building them up for.
Well, let's play some motivational words now, and then we're going to delve away from the virtual world back into your own personal life. Here's Jim Carrey.
My father could have been a great comedian, but he didn't believe that that was possible for him. And so he made a conservative choice. Instead, he got a safe job as an accountant. And when I was 12 years old, he was let go from that safe job. And our family had to do whatever we could to survive. I learned many great lessons from my father, not the least of which was that you can fail at what you don't want. So you might as well take a chance on doing what you love.
Now, leading to where you are now, it seems like it's your thing. But as we said in the introduction, you've had a roller coaster, as most people have. You've had high successes and you've had it all crumbling down around you. Now, looking back, did it go wrong because it wasn't the right business for you? Your passion wasn't in it? Was it outside market trends? Because Jim says you might as well go for what you love. Have you always done that?
Yeah, look, you know, and it is interesting what Jim said. My parents also were obviously from Coventry, very conservative, and they were always sort of pushing me to go down the safe route. And from very early on, I always had it in me that I had to go the path less traveled. I was drawn to entrepreneurship, I think, before it was such a big thing. You know, and I was always craving for a life less ordinary, I think. And I was always pushing towards, you know, what is out there and how can I live an exceptional life. And I think we actually owe it to ourselves as a civilization to kind of push the boundaries of, you know, we've been on this planet a few thousand years now, and let's not just do the same thing. How do we push the boundaries and how do we better ourselves personally, but then also as a civilization? You know, I certainly failed. When I was successful, I always felt that the fear of being ordinary was much worse than the fear of failure itself. And I've actually, throughout my sort of entrepreneurial journey, I've been, you know, reasonably or very successful 2 or 3 times now. And then I had a failure where I closed down a business, and it took kind of, you know, a large proportion of my wealth and the progress that I'd built up with it. So that was a big failure. But you obviously learn a huge amount when you're failing, and you're learning a huge amount when you're suffering and under pressure. So, you know, I've bounced back. I would have preferred to have avoided the hardship that you go through, but then I think it creates a better life overall.
It does. Yeah, jumping into that, every single person that I've spoken to, their worst times become their best times 5 years down the line when they look back on it. They could not get to where they are now. So you would say quite firmly that where you are now is in a better position because of your journey and your ups and downs?
Yeah, you know, I would prefer a life of just ups and ups and ups, but, you know, I totally agree with you. The best things in life seem to be the hardest things in life. You know, marathons aren't fundamentally fun, but people get a lot of fulfillment and purpose from them. You know, children, I hear, are a lot of hard work, and marriages are a lot of hard work as well. But, you know, it's these things that are complex, they take a lot of work, a lot of energy, that are actually the most fulfilling, the most purposeful in life. And I think exactly that about businesses. You know, coming back to your original question, sorry for sort of sidescaping that, but I don't know whether my original business was, you know, the absolute kind of purpose of my life, but I actually get fulfillment and incredible excitement from building businesses. And to me, the sort of the act of building a business is like the game of chess itself. So it's the strategy, it's the execution. And I find a lot of fulfillment in just business, you know.
And do you find now, obviously, because you've been on the journey, I've been doing this for 6 years, the podcast, but about 15 years all in all. And I look at it and I just think people make it so much more complicated. I 100% think that it's about relationships. It's about building trust, building relationships, and then the money and the sales will naturally come. But certainly in the online world, you get people that just throw up a website, they drive traffic to it, and then they wonder why it's not converting. Do you feel a similar thing, that it's about people? It's always about people?
Yeah, you know, I listen to a lot of podcasts, actually, and I read a huge amount of books on business, and I think you could actually be in business 80 years and you'd still be learning. And I think business is so unique that every business is different, and every situation that a business is in then changes all of the relevant variables anyway. You know, I was listening to a podcast today, and they said that every business problem is a people problem. When a business is small, you focus on building the product or the service. But ultimately, as you grow and you build a hierarchy and a team, you're managing the people that then manage the business. So ultimately, it is about finding the right people, bringing them on board, you know, and getting them aligned, and then getting them to produce. So ultimately, fundamentally, you know, and then we're selling to people. So everything comes down to that core, you know, common denominator, I think.
So when you was the young man and you was bootstrapping the business, then now you would probably go outsource and get it done quickly. But were you the marketer, the sales director, the customer service officer? Were you everyone at the beginning?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, I've always been bootstrapped. My first big venture was in property, and I got into property development. I was actually on Property Ladder as a young child. And, you know, that, you know, typically in property, you're doing everything yourself. I then, you know, built my second business, which was in service departments or corporate housing. And yeah, that was bootstrapped. So I was doing everything from, you know, the leases for the properties to serving the clients and building the website. But of course, as you scale, then you get more staffing on. And it was actually about 2 years after I set up that business that I realized outsourcing was out there, because you need staff, and specifically in hospitality, you need staff 24/7. And that just wasn't viable in London. You know, you're not going to get anyone working the night shift, and it would cost too much anyway. So yeah, that was my introduction into outsourcing. You know, and again, there's sort of these on-ramps and off-ramps in life and in business, and you're like, you never expected that to pop up, but then it popped up and it opened doors and it closed other doors. And yeah, it's an incredible journey, really.
It's an incredible journey in so many regards, and I reflect on my own journey as I'm listening to you talking. And one of the things that I still have a problem with is freeing up stuff that I can just do quickly. I still have that issue where I think, oh, I can just deal with that. I might as well do that. And I've also got a problem, Derek, and I'll throw this over to you, that I so love what I'm doing that it's not a business, it's a hobby. So when I'm not doing it, I don't really know what to do with myself. And I go, oh, I'm going to have a day off today. I'm going to do this. I literally have to go to another country to really recharge myself, because if I'm in the vicinity, I just love doing it. Do you have the same thing? Do you think, oh, I just pop into the office, I just do this, I just do that? Or can you wander the streets of Manila enjoying yourself?
Yeah, look, I'm a bit of a workaholic, and I think that's had a toll on me. You know, I am, as they say, an incurable entrepreneur, I believe. You know, I'm always sort of pushing. If I do get a bit of respite and things are going well, then I can get quickly bored and I want to build the next thing and build the next product, and you never want to stop. But look, it's both a good and a bad thing. I don't want to be you know, sort of half asleep through life. I really want to be pushing the boundaries and try and achieve. And if you don't achieve, you know, then you've had a good race anyway. You've run a good race and it's been full of purpose. You know, one thing that I never do, I never wake up in the morning, you know, and feeling kind of empty. What am I going to do today? You know, like I think so many people are these days, life can sometimes be a little bit too easy. People lose momentum, people lose purpose. And that, to me, is the worst kind of, thing in the world. Like, I couldn't imagine anything worse than that. So, entrepreneurship, I think, is an incredibly hard pursuit. Money is not guaranteed. And, you know, the statistics for small and medium-sized businesses are pretty bleak in terms of the ones that fail. And a lot of business owners are earning less than, you know, sort of minimum wage kind of thing. But it's an incredible pursuit, I think, and very noble pursuit.
This podcast is brought to you by Outsource Accelerator. We are the world's leading outsourcing marketplace and advisory. We help big and small businesses with their outsourcing needs, and we can help you too. We cover everything from business and staffing strategy, optimal outsourcing structures, implementations, and fully managed services. If you're already outsourcing, about to start, or somewhere in between, then we can ensure that you get the best from outsourcing. That's the best prices, best terms, and of course, the best results from your outsourcing practices. We list over 700 outsourcing suppliers on our website, host this leading outsourcing podcast, and have over 5,000 pages of content. Because we span the entire market, we can ensure that you get the best deal possible. We offer everything from light brokerage, co-managed services, through to fully managed solutions. Get in touch today. Visit us at outsourceaccelerator.com/quote. Mention that you're a podcast listener, and we will give you special attention plus a 10% discount. This is for a limited time only. Go to outsourceaccelerator.com/quote.
I love the fact that you laughed there. You laughed knowingly. So if you was in a pub now and there was a load of people sitting around, would you say to them, you know, you should do it? Or would you say, you've got to know yourself first? What would your advice be?
If it was a young kid, I would probably hesitate. And, you know, I think there's too much kind of rah, rah, rah around entrepreneurship now, and everything is about, they're in vogue at the moment, you know, and I'm really concerned. When I was growing up, the best of the best would become a lawyer or a doctor, or they would become, you know, they would go to Wall Street, and they would have 5 or 10 years of really good, you know, sort of pedigree training in a investment bank. Whereas now, kids are leaving school, they're going straight into startups. And if you have one or two failures within a small startup that never reaches TechCrunch or, you know, any of these magazines, then your career has really gone down the gurgler. So there is quite a big risk associated with, you know, jumping onto the next startup, and it gets $1 million funding, and then it runs out of funding, and then it's gone. It's a very risky path, and I love it, I embrace it, but I'm not sure it's ideal for all of society to pursue, because you need sort of a good foundation in society of safe, content people. So, not sure.
Because,
what would you say?
Jim Carrey always says you go for the thing you love. And now I think to myself, I'm in something that I'm obsessed by. And I'm obsessed by just the sort of nuances of taking it where I am. I wouldn't say I love it. You know, if somebody came along and gave me 10 million, I'd quite happily turn everything off and just walk away and sort of, you know, leave it behind. But I think that you've got to have something that you become obsessed with. And that's where I think people struggle, because they expect instant gratification. They expect to click an app. They expect to do this and do that. And where I come up to like 1,600 episodes, as I say, people say to me, wow, that's a lot. I feel like I'm just getting going. But then I speak to other people and they say, oh, yeah, I did 30 podcast episodes. It didn't go anywhere. And so I gave up on it. And I think, well, that is the failure. It's the instant gratification market that's out there, which I think is getting worse and worse and worse. I see it in my own kids. If they don't get the rewards, if they don't get the gold medal, well, they do get gold medals just for turning up. They just have to go to some competition. Everyone gets a medal. And I come back and go, you know, who won? We didn't win, but you got a medal. Well, how does that work? I think that is where a lot of the problems happen, Derek.
Yeah, I agree. And look, life is a grind. And I think to be successful, life is an even bigger grind, because unless you're lucky, you know, you've got to get out of the gravitational force of everyone else trying to kind of better you. And it's almost impossible to break out of that gravitational force. And you're not going to do it by kind of taking a few Instagram shots and becoming an influencer. It is really, really hard work, because you're not only competing, well, you're competing against every single other person on this planet. You know, and so it is grit and grind. But, you know, I think going back to what we said earlier, you look back and that actually is the reward. It's not necessarily the I don't know, the boat or the Ferrari at the end of your career, but it is actually the fulfillment of succeeding and going through this process. But yeah, you know, every day, I mean, I love what I do and I'm challenged and I love outsourcing and I love our business and it's successful. But every day I come to the computer and I'm like, you know, geez, another day, 100 more emails, and you've got to push through it. It's crazy, but it is. It's fulfilling.
Well, let's take you back into the virtual assistants. And I love the phrase you used about the gravitational pull. You've got to, you know, the effort of getting a rocket off the ground is 80% the first bit and then very little once you get going. Now, with the virtual assistants, one of the things that I struggled with when I did this in the early days was I found myself in a kind of pull where somebody would do 10 minutes work for somebody and then the management now, I imagine, would go, right, okay, you're now on David's work. And there wasn't that connection. They didn't quite understand it. How can you get somebody without breaking the bank who is totally your person? Or is it better now than it was 3 or 4 years ago? Is it not that kind of conveyor belt of shifting tasks around a desk?
Yeah, look, absolutely. As I mentioned right at the start, it's really like employment. You can get any kind of employment in the UK. And if you've got to get a part-time university student for £5 an hour, don't expect too much from them. And the same applies in the employment world when you outsource. You know, there's obviously Upwork and Freelancer, the gig economy. And there's a lot of friction with initiating a task, okay? And if it takes 3 months to get to know someone, get to know the job and process, if that job is only 1 week or 1 month long, and it takes 3 months to really get to know the process and the person, then you're never really going to get it. And there's always going to be friction. There's always going to be drop-off. And this is what you see in these, you know, project gig economies of Upwork and Freelancer. Because, you know, as soon as you've got the person up to speed and they've done one project and finally it's right after all the revisions, then the project's finished or they leave or you can't find them again, you know, and it doesn't really work. We really think that dedicated agents, dedicated people that get to know you, you get to know them, works, you know, incredibly better. Now, of course, it's down to your budget, but, you know, luckily, the Philippines, it is a cheaper place to be. And you know, you get very well qualified, highly motivated people, you know, sort of Gen Ys, with a college degree for, you know, kind of $500 per month base salary. And if you can't afford that, then I think, you know, sure, go to the Upworks and freelancers. But then as soon as you can afford staffing at about, you know, all in, it's about $1,000 to $1,500 US per month, then go for it and start to build your team, start to build the culture of your business and the hierarchy around that, and you will not look back.
Now, there was a guy, I assume he's still around, I don't really listen to podcasts, but when I first started, called Chris Ducker, and he had a book called Virtual Staff Finder, I think it was, and he was in the Philippines, and he basically, you would pay him, and he would find the right member of staff for you. Is that a kind of service that you provide? Because as I was reading the book, I thought to myself, yeah, this is what you need. You need this filtering process so that you end up with maybe four or five candidates that you can then speak one-on-one.
Yeah, absolutely. Chris Tucker he's down in Cebu, actually, and he's also listed on our website. Look, we are a little bit like a TripAdvisor for outsourcing. We list 700 outsourcing suppliers on our website. We have about 5,000 pages of content. We have videos. We also have a podcast with about 250 episodes, so we have a bit of catching up for you. But you know, it's basically a site where you go to learn about outsourcing. You can get free quotes for whatever your requirement is, whether it's one person or 1,000 people. And then we can come in, we can offer free brokerage to find that perfect supplier or facility for you, or you know, we can do anything up to fully managed solutions. So we manage teams as big as 100, 150 people, and we manage everything from staffing to right through to the output. So you know, we are completely independent. We you know, basically cover the entire Philippine industry and provide thousands of pages of information just so that you can basically explore, learn about outsourcing, get a sense of the prices, get a sense of the different facilities and structures, and then, you know, if you're comfortable, make the first move.
Now, from my listeners' point of view, one of the things that I know they struggle with is when they are so entrenched in the weeds of building a business, they can't come up with a list of tasks. Or if they do, it's so eclectic, you wouldn't get one person to be able to do all of it. Any advice, Derek, for the people out there that are thinking, yeah, this is a good idea, but I don't know how to, you know, find the right tasks, first of all, that allow me to play to my strengths and develop my business?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and you do have to go through a process. You have to be honest, pause for a little while or take, you know, one or two steps back so that you can progress. And if you do that, if you take the time out, then you will go into the next sort of phase of your business and you will never look back. You know, you actually have to get things, as a business owner, you have to get things out of your head and onto paper or into a process, because your business is not you. It is a process, and you have to get a team on the same page working on that process with you. So in terms of, you know, practical processes, just write a list of what you do. You can even track things every day as you do them for about a week. You will get a sense of the things that you are doing. You're probably spending a lot of time on non-core activities. You're probably spending a lot of time on very, very low value activities. You know, and if you can get those off your plate, then you can concentrate on doing the high value activities, the revenue generating activities, and you will go, you know, to the next phase very quickly. Common activities are, you know, you're probably spending a lot of time in your email inbox. You're probably doing basic bookkeeping and accounts. You're probably doing things that you're not particularly good at yourself, like basic digital marketing or social media updating. Write all these things down. Also write down the things that bug you or you really can't stand doing, and get these onto a sheet, itemize them, block them together into sort of whatever kind of skill sets they are, and then figure out if there is a dedicated role available for those. I would recommend that you don't spread someone too thin. You know, so you're not going to get someone composing incredible articles, also updating your social media, also editing your podcast, and also doing your finance and accounting. So just start with small little verticals. And as well, it's about training yourself. So getting used to delegating, getting used to sort of handing off tasks, then getting them back, critiquing them, sending them back, and then, you know, refining this process. But it's unfortunately at the start, it requires a little bit of time investment, but you won't regret it.
I don't think anyone will regret it, but there is that benchmark of bootstrapping that people forget that they've moved on to the next phase. And I think that's the big thing where I speak to people and they say, oh, yeah, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And I say, why are you doing that? And it's just because they've always done it. They forget that they've moved on, that businesses progress.
Yeah. And you leave yourself exposed, you know. And, you know, I don't know the sort of demographic that you're talking about, but if you're one person, then it means that you can never go away on a holiday. It means that if you're sick, then you're vulnerable, you know, and your business stops. It's essential to get all of these things out of your head as well. If you're the only person running it or the main person running it, then you're not going to get very good valuations if you ever have to sell the business. This is a process of maturation for your business. And if it's all in your head, plus you have about two or three sort of helpers running around after you doing odd jobs, then that really isn't a business. That is a job. And you might be paid well for that job, but it's not a business. It's not scalable, and it's not able to exist without you. So it is painful, and it's one of the growing pains of business, but get it out of your head, build processes, and build a team that can execute so that you can focus on building the business, on the core activities, the high-value activities, you know, and then you can really scale this really quickly and cost-efficiently.
Great stuff. Well, let's listen to some words that this guy said back in 2005. And of course, it became the theme of Join Up Dots. Here's Steve Jobs.
Of course, it was impossible to connect the dots looking forward when I was in college. But it was very, very clear looking backwards 10 years later. Again, you can't connect the dots looking forward. You can only connect them looking backwards. So you have to trust that the dots will somehow connect in your future. You have to trust in something. Your gut, destiny, life, karma, whatever. Because believing that the dots will connect down the road will give you the confidence to follow your heart, even when it leads you off the well-worn path. And that will make all the difference.
Now, one of the things you said, Derek, was the fear of being ordinary was more scary than going the path that everyone else was treading. That's basically what Steve was saying there. Now, how have you dealt with... You know, he says you've got to trust, you've got to have faith. What he's also saying is, you know, there's no answers. You've just got to plow into the unknown. How do you deal with that bit when so much of entrepreneurship is doing that, just kind of doing stuff, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes you look at it and think, I had no idea why I was spending time doing that. It's so wrong for my business. How do you move through?
Yeah, look. You know, after 20 years in business myself, I find it very difficult to make plans. And especially the more detailed the plans, the more fallible they are. I think, you know, there's a lot of intuition with this, and I'm quite science-based, but I think there's a lot of intuition. Your brain and mind is kind of feeding off the years of experience that you have. It's feeding off all of the multitude of data points that are coming in every moment. And from that, you're making calculated decisions, I think. Now, there's also a lot of luck. There's a lot of timing. There's a lot of things out of your direct control. But then there's also grit and determination to counter that. But I think it's this crazy mix of, you know, an infinite number of variables that are changing day to day. So I tend not to plan too much. I have, of course, like the North Star. I know where we're going to go. I try and not be too distracted by the newest, shiniest thing, but really sort of, you know, kind of be comfortable in just evolving as you go. I think it's very difficult to kind of to put into a concise plan, really.
Well, it's funny because I used to be in corporate land for many, many years, and we used to have these quarterly meetings when the quarterly targets were set. And I used to sit there all the time thinking, you're making it up. You're making it up, and you've never once hit any of these targets. But every quarter, every 6 months, we have to sit and assess it. And it always seemed strange to me, but in entrepreneurship, as you say, it is making up as you go along. And little by little, things get stronger, and little by little, things fall by the wayside. And sometimes the things that fall by the wayside come back later because they just weren't quite right at that time. It really is, it's malleable and flexible, isn't it?
Yeah, it absolutely is. And it's about, you know, you've got to put in the hard work and you've got to be prepared for when the good luck comes along, that you're able to, you know, be opportunistically ready for it. It doesn't come if you're just sitting on the sofa waiting for it. So there is a combination of everything. But I find an interesting sort of comparable between sports stars and businessmen. Successful businessmen can credit success to a huge variety of things. You know, some of them are saying, you know, follow the universe, follow your intuition, work hard, work 12-hour days, work 6-hour days. You know, the variety of advice in business is so broad. Yet you look at athletes, and to be honest, you can't fudge it as an athlete. You know, if you want to be the best swimmer in the world, you're doing pretty much an identical training routine to the second best and third best swimmer in the world, because there's no escaping the sort of the reality of excelling in sports. But it seems in business, there are so many routes to success. You know, it might be luck, it might be the right time, right position, right strategy, or it could be the friends you know or the money you have. You know, there's incredible variability in business. And that's why I think it's very difficult to replicate things, and also very difficult to, I think you can take advice and learn a lot in a lot of books, that you have to, you're on your own journey, you know, and you're carving your own path, which is both a good thing and a scary thing in a way.
Well, we've been on a path moving towards the Sermon on the Mic, when we're going to send you back in time to have a one-on-one with your younger self. But before then, to summarize the whole episode, what would be your three big bits of advice for somebody that's never gone into the virtual assistant world, but is listening to this content and thinking, this is, it's time for a dabble? What would be your big three for them to focus in on?
Okay, so you as a business owner or aspiring to be, you absolutely have to consider outsourcing. You don't necessarily have to do it, but you cannot have your head in the sand. This is happening. This is massive. And you are obligated really to explore this and see whether it's right for you. Number two is that, you know, outsourcing is so broad. Treat it like employment. It is very easy to start, but it has 1,000 nuances, just as employment does. It is no magic bullet. It won't cure all of your business ills, but you know it's an incredible thing that once you start, it will transform your business. And number three, outsourcing is so powerful. It is virtually any profession now. So you know, virtual assistants are obviously very powerful, very useful, but you can outsource anything from, you know, PhDs to scientists to architects to doctors to nurses. So you know, it is only limited by your imagination, and virtually anything can be done now over the internet and offshore outsourced.
Wow, you can outsource a nurse. I had no idea.
Yeah, incredible. It's all being done over iPad now. So nurses are holding consultations over iPads, over video. They're taking all the notes as the doctor's talking. Huge in America because they're so sort of burdened by all the reporting that needs to be done and the regulations and things like that.
Fantastic stuff. Right. Well, this is the bit of the show that we've been leading up to, and this is the bit that we call the Sermon on the Mic, when we're going to send you back in time to have a one-on-one with your younger self. And if you could go back in time and speak to the young Derek, what age would you like to speak to, and what advice would you like to give him? Well, we're going to find out, because I'm going to play the music, and when it fades, you're up. This is the Sermon on the Mic.
With the best bit of the show, the Sermon on the Mic, the Sermon on the Mic.
Wow, I'm excited. So I am talking to the younger Derek. He is probably about 22, 23 years of age. And, you know, I would say I would support him. I would say, look, pursue a life less ordinary. It's an incredible journey, but don't rush. Life is a lot longer, and you know it has a lot more evolutions than you think. Take your time. You don't need to do everything within one day, and you know, be confident about who you are and the opportunities that will unfold ahead of you. It doesn't all necessarily need to be visible and clear as you're heading into that process. But be confident that you can figure these things out, and things will work out. And just reiterating a comment that is very close to me is, who would you be if you weren't so afraid? So it's having the confidence to really push things out of the way that are holding you back internally, and really chasing your dreams and aspirations. That's it, young Derek.
Great stuff. Good advice for everybody. Derek, what's the number one best way that our audience can connect with you, sir?
Yeah, absolutely. So just go to our website, which is outsourceaccelerator.com. And of course, people can contact me direct, which is Derek@outsourceaccelerator.com. And Derek is D-E-R-E-K.
We will have all the links on the show notes to make it as easy as possible. Derek, thank you so much for spending time with us today, joining up those dots. Please come back again when you've got more dots to join up, because I do believe that by joining up those dots and connecting our past is actually the best way to build our futures. Derek Gallimore, thank you so much.
That was me being interviewed on the Join Up Dots podcast with David Ralph. If you want any of the show notes, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/262. And as always, if you want to ask us anything, then just drop us an email to ask@outsourceaccelerator.com.